the poisons in our food. First, let me put out the standard disclaimer. The FDA has not evaluated any of the claims or statements made in this presentation or on my website or by me. Nor are any of these statements or claims intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease, because only an FDA-approved drug can legally make such a claim in the U.S. This is education, not medical advice. It is not meant to replace the advice or guidance from your personal physician. Always speak with your personal physician before starting any new diets, vitamins, supplements, or exercise program. This is part of a 6-lecture series, and the objectives here are to help you understand the critical role of mitochondria in determining health, recognize how toxins in our food, water, and air can mimic depression, fibromyalgia, understand what nutrients will help the body remove toxins, which foods are at the greatest risk for contamination, and in short, understand how to eat for better health. Rachel Carlson, an author and who wrote Silent Spring in 1962, made a very powerful observation. She said, "For the first time in the history of the world, every human being is now subjected to contact with dangerous chemicals from the moment of conception until death. In less than 2 decades of their use, these synthetic pesticides have so thoroughly distributed throughout the animate and inanimate world that they occur virtually everywhere." Xenobiotics is that term. It is the name for the chemicals that have been man-made. We have over 85,000 new chemicals registered by the Environmental Protection Agency's Toxic Substances Control Act. Less than half of these are tested for human toxicity, and less than 7% are tested for their impact on the brain. This is a substantial risk for ourselves and for our children. Xenobiotics include a wide range of compounds: pesticides, plastics, perfluorooctanes, which are Teflons, industrial compounds like dioxin, pigments, paints, dyes, the flame retardants we put on our children's pajamas, and the petrochemical fuels and solvents. In studies done in Europe and in North America of babies that have been born of the cord blood and the breast milk, we're finding many xenobiotics. We're finding plastics, pesticides, heavy metals, Teflons, and many of these compounds have been banned for decades. That is how long that they persist in the environment. Now, I'm sure most of you are well aware that there has been a rapid escalation of healthcare costs and a rapid increase in chronic disease. What is even more troubling is the rapid increase in the problems with our children's health. Birth defects have gone up, now 3 to 5%. There's been a 20 to 60% increase in the rate of cancer, depending on the type. The immune disorders, things like rheumatoid arthritis, diabetes, multiple sclerosis, 100 to 400% increase in the last generation. Puberty keeps getting earlier and earlier, and that should be 25% of our 4-year-olds are obese. Reproductive system disorders are happening. We have a marked increase in polycystic ovarian disease, 25% increase of prematurity, infertility, and there's a 40% sperm count drop worldwide in the last generation. In America, 1 in 4 children are on psychiatric medication. We have explosions of learning disabilities, depression, aggression, behavior problems, autism. This chart summarizes the change in health problems. So while we've had a decline in infectious disease problems, there has been a phenomenal increase in the risk of chronic problems like asthma, type 1 diabetes, Crohn's disease, multiple sclerosis, and even more dramatic increase for autism. Now, there is some increasing number of studies coming out showing associations between autism and some of the xenobiotics. Organochlorine is a pesticide, and there's an odds ratio, which is very strong. The closer you are to a field that is receiving these pesticides, the higher risk of having autistic children. These two slides compare the per county rate of pollution in the water and air and the per county rate of spending on special education in schools and the increase in autism. There's a strong association between the amount of mercury release, the water pollution, air pollution, and the rate of neurodevelopmental problems, including autism. Arsenic, also toxic to the brain and increasing the risk of cancer. It's been tightly controlled in the water. What this slide shows is that arsenic is what is used to treat wood and is sold in Home Depot and many similar types of stores for families to make play structures in their schools, in their parks, and in their backyards. The compelling part of this slide is that the micrograms of arsenic per day, if you are playing, if you're drinking water at the standard level, compared to what happens if you have a child who's playing on a arsenic-treated wood structure, because young children are very hand, mouth, oral creatures. Endocrine disruptors are compounds that will interact with the same kind of endocrine receptors in our body. We've done most of the study looking at estrogen receptors, but these disruptors appear to interact with the testosterone androgen receptors. They also interact with the adrenal hormone receptors. And endocrine disruptors are lots of places. Pesticides, sewage, and our shampoos, detergents, conditioners, cosmetics, and sunscreens. A lot of things with fragrances in them that we put on ourselves. Acrylamide is a compound that scientists will use to kill brain cells for study. The acrylamide in low doses kills brain cells, lets us conduct quite a number of studies. But unfortunately, acrylamide will also show up as a result of smoking. It's part of plastics, particularly plastics exposed to heat, as in microwaving, as in a hot car, as in trucking, or in high-temperature frying, as in deep-fat frying for fast food, French fries and potato chips being significant sources for many, particularly our children. Heavy metals are toxic to brain cells. Mercury, lead, arsenic, aluminum are the most common sources. That will increase inflammation, oxidative stress in the brain. And we can see heavy metals contributing to refractory, resistant, inflammatory diseases, neuropsychiatric disorders, and early dementias. The CDC has estimated in January of 2003 that 8% of American women of childbearing age have elevated levels of mercury, which means we have 300,000 newborn babies at risk of having some mercury damage. This the UN report that was put out in this decade states that the ecosystem damage is so severe that we can no longer be confident that the planet Earth can support human life for more than two generations. It's very sobering that the burden of toxins have become so diffuse and appears to be steadily increasing year by year. Now, the synergistic effects of toxins are not entirely well known because most of the studies are one at a time. But the reality is we have hundreds of compounds in our blood, in our fat, that we're exposed to every day. An example of the synergistic effect is smoking and asbestos. If you smoke, you have 10 times the risk of developing lung cancer as compared to a non-smoker. If you have asbestos exposure, you have 5 times the risk as compared to someone who does not have asbestos exposure. If you combine smoking and asbestos exposure, now you have 55 times the risk. So that's more than additive, which would have been 15, and it's more than multiplicative, which would have been 50. There's increasing recognition that these multiple toxins, as they interact with our unique DNA, we may have relatively unique and higher levels of sensitivity, particularly if you have some deficiencies in how the enzymes that clear toxins. Minerals. The heavy metals toxins often poison some of the mineral enzymes which are responsible for getting the heavy metals out, thus increasing the mineral intake requirement as you become more have a heavier toxic load. Mineral intake, unfortunately, is often low, and minerals that are important to brain health and to detoxification include magnesium, selenium, iodine, and zinc. In North America, our iodine intake is low. That's because our soil content is relatively iodine deficient. Iodine was added to the salt, but when physicians decided that salt was associated with high blood pressure, physicians, myself included, often said, stop taking so much salt. And the iodine intake is now below the minimum. Add to that, fluoride and bromide have been added to either our water or our food, which further increases the iodine requirement. The bottom line is, lack of iodine compromises our ability to handle toxins and to get rid of them out of our bodies. So, I ask people to think about their toxic exposures. And so, those exposures include where you've grown up, where you've lived, the kinds of hobbies. Do you have occupations that put you out compared to solvents, pesticides, personal habits, how many vaccinations? And do you have amalgams, that is, mercury, silver fillings in your mouth? So a lot of people say, well, what's the story on mercury fillings, the amalgams? Is that a problem or not? Well, according to the WHO, the daily human exposure to mercury vapor from your amalgam fillings ranges from 3 micrograms to 17 micrograms, as compared to a maximum of 2.6 micrograms from other sources. So the WHO, generally a conservative organization, is saying that mercury vapor from fillings is a significant load or contributor to toxic load. Then the question is, okay, so how do we test this? Here, tests for mercury from fish exposure. Urine and blood will test how well I can excrete the heavy metal right now. But if my detoxifying enzymes have been damaged, and they do become damaged as you become poisoned, they could be artificially low. So the best kind of test is to challenge test with a chelating agent and then a subsequent urine collection. That is to have someone who has some expertise in treating heavy metal intoxication run the test. So toxic load equals the toxins absorbed each day minus the toxins excreted each day. And the general principle of detoxification then is to, 1, reduce exposure, 2, increase nutrient intake, and 3, improve the health of the gut to minimize the recycling of the toxins. You know, some of the traditional approaches to cleansing detoxification included doing fast, a lot of olive oil, lemon juice, sauna, sweat lodges, cathartic, so you poop your brains out, and very simple elemental diets to minimize toxin exposure during that time period. So let's talk a little bit more about how to reduce exposures. Think about pesticides, trying to have organic food, look carefully at your indoor pollution, whether or not there's any kind of synthetics in the environment. Can you get rid of them, take them out? Do you have to have Orkin come by and spray your house all the time? The fish, low mercury fish, there's a list there. Some of the quick highlights I've listed for you. But there's another slide that has a longer detail of the least mercury fish. The asterisks fish have to do with some concern that these may become overfished. So our least mercury fish is here. Best choice. Now this is our pesticide content, highest to lowest. So these foods during industrial commercialized farming will have a high level of pesticide use. So it's going to be very important to wash those carefully. And if you can, think about an organic product instead. I'm going to give you some of my food suggestions in terms of how to support your cells' ability to get rid of these toxins. Lots and lots of vegetables and fruit. You want at least 3 greens, 3 colored, 1 set of mushroom or onions, and 2 more of your choice. Variety is good. Nuts and nutritional yeast every day. Minerals from dried seaweed and algae are very helpful. Bone broth is very helpful for the minerals. Organ meats once a week, because that's a great source of B vitamins and coenzyme Q. And fish and shellfish, I think, are important, but you want to be very careful to have low mercury. Improving excretion. It's all about healthy mitochondria. The mitochondria convert glucose to cellular ATP, which is what our cell uses to do all the chemistry of life. It's the mitochondria that metabolize and remove the drugs and toxins. All chemical plants have trash at the end. Even the ones in our bodies, even our mitochondria, have trash at the end. Those are free radicals. And the other term for that is oxidative stress. So we need to help the mitochondria handle all that trash. The trash we eat and bring in, and the trash the mitochondria make themselves doing the act of living. So, key mitochondrial food, B vitamins, coenzyme Q. That's all about greens, kale, collards, livers, nuts, seeds, nutritional yeast, and mushrooms. It's also about sulfur in the form of lots of cabbage, onions, and the cabbage family and the onion family, and mushrooms. Antioxidants are those bright colors. So bright colors, if you're diabetic, I would stress the brightly colored vegetables. If you're kids, you probably do better by stressing the brightly colored fruits. And it's very helpful to have the blues, the reds, and the yellow oranges. Okay. Detoxifying enzyme inducers. As you get rid of the stuff, the toxins, the mitochondria has 2 sets of enzymes, phase 1 and phase 2. Some of the enzymes inducers for phase 1 are really those bright color, the berries, the blueberries, strawberries, raspberries, elderberries, cherries. They are very helpful at stimulating the first set of enzymes that are necessary for getting rid of the toxins. The second set of enzymes, the phase 2, are very helped supported by green tea, the cruciferous, that's the cabbage family, so cabbage, kale, broccoli, cauliflower, turnips, radishes, allicin, which is the onion, garlic, chives, leeks, shallots, algae, things like chlorella and spirulina, and milk thistle, which is, you know, a cousin of some of the leaf lettuce. All of those things help support the mitochondria making more enzymes. And the more enzymes you have, the faster and more effectively you can dispose of the toxins. These are the medical terms for a number of the B vitamins, antioxidants, and organic sulfurs that are so helpful for the micronutrients. The B vitamins, that's green leaves, nutritional yeast, organ meat, the antioxidants, those are the sulfur-containing foods, and the brilliant colors. Lipoic acid, we're just now beginning to see where that is found, and examples there are nutritional yeast, mushrooms, spinach, bright greens. Carnitine seems to be, we know so far, in wild game and rare red meat. Resveratrol, think of that as black foods, sulfur, cabbage family, onion family, also mushrooms. Other important nutrients, vitamin D, you'd want to be sure that you've had your vitamin D up to the upper normal range, or at least up to the midpoint. You may need to get a vitamin D level. If you are a person with any kind of pigmented skin and you're living in America, you're likely too far north to make enough vitamin D on your own. And I'd strongly encourage you to think about getting a vitamin D and having a physician help you get enough supplemental D to stay in the well into the normal range. You may need additional vitamin C and vitamin E if you're going through a detox program. These other compounds are supplements that have been helpful in detox because they are inducers of phase 1 and phase 2 enzymes. Turmeric is curry powder. Pine bark, bilberry, grape extract are associated with that blue-black color. Melatonin is the hormone we make at night when we go to sleep, which is why if you're having difficulty sleeping, in my practice I have people take 1 milligram of melatonin an hour before they'd like to go to sleep. The bottom line, what I hope you're getting from this is why color is so very helpful and why I strongly recommend you have something red every day, something yellow-orange every day, and something blue-black every day. Foods that bind crap in the gut is algae, very helpful. So spirulina, chlorella, phase 1 inducers, ellagic acid, which are berries, bright colors, and turmeric are very helpful there. Phase 2 inducers, the cruciferous, the allicin family, green tea, turmeric, and artichoke. Antioxidant support, these are some of the supplements that have been used. Again, the reason I put that up mostly is to try and help you understand the diet that I've developed and that I talk to my patients about, stressing the bright colors is great support for phase 1. And that's why you want to have something blue, something red, something yellow every day. And then in phase 2, we're talking about cruciferous family vegetables, green tea, the glucosinolates, that also includes onion families, curcumin, which is turmeric, carnosol, which is rosemary. So if you stress a diet that has bright colors, some green tea, and the onion family and the cabbage family, you're giving your mitochondria great support for all the biochemistry they need to do as part of the detoxifying process. Cracked cell chlorella is an algae that has some high molecular weight polysaccharides. And we've seen that this has been very helpful at increasing the secretion of heavy metals and polychlorinated hydrocarbons, which are hard to get rid of. It needs to be cracked cell chlorella, so the non-cracked cell is not so helpful. Turmeric, which is curry powder, is wonderfully good for us. It helps both phase 1 and phase 2. And so cooking with curry is very helpful. Some people will make a sort of a curry tea with curry powder or turmeric powder. As I mentioned earlier, minerals required for detoxification include iodine, selenium, and magnesium. And remember, iodine, Americans are short on iodine. I strongly encourage dried seaweed, kelp, 1/4 to 1 teaspoon a day in my clinical practice. Other minerals, magnesium, that's the central ion in chlorophyll, much like iron is central to our hemoglobin molecules. So more green leaves help you with more magnesium. Zinc and selenium are important. They're in green leaves, also in nutritional yeast. And trace minerals in bone broth, sea salt, and seaweed. Chelation. Lots of folks ask me about chelation. And there are times when it may be required. But if it's not done properly, it can make people much more ill, as the mercury is mobilized from the fat. But if you can't excrete it rapidly enough, it will get relocated into either your heart or your brain, and terrible things will happen. So should you decide to go through chelation, you want to be sure that the person who's supervising the chelation has had additional training. And in the U.S., that would include the American Board of Clinical Metal Toxicology or the American College for Advancement in Medicine. Sauna is another possibility. It decreases the circulation to the internal organs, and it increases peripheral circulation, your metabolic rate, your oxygen consumption, and you pour out lots of sweat. So it turns out there are several studies showing that sauna will give you what is the equivalent of a mild aerobic workout, and it is more effective at excreting toxins than urine or bile. So if you're working on getting rid of your toxin, you want to have dilute urine, so drink lots of water. You want your bile to be dilute and getting out quickly, so you'd want to have enough fiber in the diet, so having 2 to 3 bowel movements a day. And you want to sweat a lot. As I mentioned earlier, there's a whole slew of things that get released in sweat. Heavy metals, we know about drugs, plastics, and some of the endocrine disruptors will get released in sweat. This is a picture of an infrared sauna. The price for those things have come down remarkably, and so it's actually quite possible to get a single unit sauna for less than $2,000 online. And you can often, if you're determined, you may be able to find a two-person infrared sauna for less than $2,500. Once again, I want to remind everyone the FDA has not evaluated any of the claims or statements made in this presentation on my website or by me. Nor are any of my statements or claims intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease, because only an FDA-approved drug can legally make such claims. This presentation has not been intended to be medical advice. It is education. And your specific health issues can make these suggestions not helpful and potentially quite harmful, particularly if you're on blood thinners or have any kidney, liver, or heart problems. Therefore, always take information gained from presentations such as this, and then go check with your personal physician to talk about how this information may relate to you, and get their guidance before starting any new diets, vitamins, supplements, or exercise programs. Strategies that can be helpful to cells in terms of improving the cell's ability to get rid of toxins so that the toxins excreted, you can always excrete at least as much and more than what you took in that day. So you want to minimize exposure. Think about organic foods, indoor chemicals, synthetics. Think about the air and water quality. And maximize excretion. So for mitochondria, that means eating greens and lots of color. You'd like to induce the enzymes that help get rid of stuff. So that's cabbage, onions, and color. You may want to bind the toxins in the gut. So it turns out alga in green tea can be very helpful there and increase the flow of the urine, the flow of bowel movements, and the flow of sweat. Chelation, while it may be helpful, is fraught with risk. You want to be sure that if you pursue chelation, that you have someone who's had additional training. And that's because if things are mobilized faster than what the mitochondria can excrete, then you shift the toxic burden from your fat cells to your heart and your brain, which never works out. Supportive supplements. The most helpful things appear to be omega-3s, B vitamins, coenzyme Q, the sulfur amino acids, algae, and green tea. However, the food that one eats is the most critical. And by focusing on greens, colors, some seaweed and kelp, you can go provide tremendous support to your cells' ability to handle the toxins that are in our environment and the toxins that we generate simply by living every day. Supportive foods then in the Walls diet. In general, I like to have people avoid gluten, dairy, eggs. Vegetables and fruit, I stress very much. Three green, three colored, one mushrooms, two cabbage onion family. And if people can't eat the 9 cups, I just tell them, do what you can, follow those proportions in general. Fish and shellfish I think are very helpful for us, but you want to be careful to have low mercury fish. Nuts, nutritional yeast daily I believe is helpful. Minerals are a big issue, and so having dried seaweed, iodized sea salt is helpful. Organ meats, particularly if they are cooked slow and kept fairly rare, are packed with B vitamins and coenzyme Q. Bone broth is packed with minerals. For more information, the Institute for Functional Medicine, it's a great website. They also provide a list of providers, and that's an international organization to find people who have more expertise in providing support to the functions of our body. The World's Healthiest Foods by George Madelgen has a great cookbook, The World's Healthiest Foods, and a lot of recipes to help you figure out how to eat more greens and more vegetables. And the stuff that I have on my website, which is www.terrywalls.com, Mind Eat My Mitochondria. Actually, I have limited quantities of that, so you could, if you want to order that book, send me an email, and if I still have some in stock, we'll send that out to you. We have some lectures, the Food is Medicine lecture series. There is a 6-lecture series, the intro, Bone Health, Brain Health, Autoimmunity, How to Afford It, and Obesity. That's audio, plays in your audio players. The DVD lecture will play in DVDs, and that's PowerPoints and synchronized audio. Those 4 lectures are Introduction, Brain Health, Autoimmunity, and Obesity. I'm out lecturing, teaching the public and the medical professionals, clinicians, about the interactions between food, biochemistry, cellular physiology, and health. The key concept that I'm trying to convey to as many people as possible is that DNA is not destiny. Our chronic diseases have much more to do with the foods we are eating, or more importantly, not eating, and the toxins to which we're being exposed. And so that by changing one's nutrition, getting more micronutrients, ending the starvation by eating more greens and color, and thinking carefully about how to minimize one's exposure to toxins and maximize the ability of your body and your cells to handle those toxins, I see over and over again health of my patients improve. So, please check with your physicians, see how you can maximize your micronutrient intake and minimize your toxins. Thank you very much.